Hello, young scientists. Yes, you, listening to this podcast.
I'm Dr. Universe, and if you're anything like me, you've got lots of big questions about our world. On this episode, we'll talk with real researchers about how coins are made, robot languages, bee wings, how food gives us energy, if dogs can tell time, and finally explore the tiny world of microbes. A big thanks to our friends Natalie and Sierra, who helped read the questions on this episode. Let's get started.
Hi, I'm Natalie. This question comes from Dahlia, 10, in Olympia, Washington. How are coins made?
Our friend Elizabeth Riley Girojock, an economist at Washington State University, was happy to help with this question.
Every coin that we use by anything in the United States was made at one of the U.S. Mint facilities.
It turns out they've been making more coins than usual, but we'll get to that in a second. It takes both science and art to make coins. According to the U.S. Mint, an artist first designs the coin. Sculptors then take that design and model it in clay or on a computer. The model can be made into a plaster cast that gets scanned into a computer. Computer software then helps us engrave the design into the end of a metal cylinder, and this is like a big stamp that will be used to make more stamps or dies that we can use to press the design into the metal. Meanwhile, a big machine cuts out circle shapes called blanks from huge sheets of metal.
And then what they do is the blanks, they heat them so that they soften them so that they'll hold the image better. And then they cool, wash, and dry them off. Like get them all spiffy, you know, so they look really nice and shiny.
Finally, they go through these machines that raise the edges of the blanks and stamp the coin designs. Due to COVID-19, a lot of people aren't using coins, and stores are short on change. The U.S. Mint is producing extra coins for the rest of the year to catch up.
Also interesting, they're asking people to start spending their coins. Break open that piggy bank, get those coins out, and then bring them into the store.
You can take coins to the bank to exchange them for paper money. You can take them to a coin kiosk, or you can use them at the store. Together, we can help solve this problem. Now we turn from economics to engineering.
Hi, I'm Sierra. This question comes from Hank, age 8, in Virginia. Do robots have their own language, and is there a translator?
Thanks, Sierra. Here's our friend Manoj Karki, an engineer at Washington State University.
Computers, and for that matter robots, run with ones and zeros, which are represented by voltage and no voltage, or current or no current. These days, when we have to tell computers or robots to do something, we don't provide ones and zeros. Rather, we provide a language, instructions in a language that is not like our human language, but quite understandable by humans.
Karki and his team work on robots and help program them to do things like pick apples or pull weeds.
Do we have translators? In a way, programmers are translators from English or the language we speak as human into the language computers understand. Programmers convert our needs that we understand to the instructions that the computers understand.
Programmers have even helped computers gain the ability to translate different languages.
There are intelligent programs. They can convert Spanish into English or English into Nepali. So there's that aspect. But again, computers have their own language, which is different than ours. And we as programmers are the translators between natural language and the computer language.
Engineers and robots can help us in all kinds of ways, even in agriculture and on the farm. You know, beekeepers and bees are really important to agriculture as well.
Another great question comes from Natalia, age 13, in Kennewick, Washington. What are bee wings made of?
Thanks, Sierra. Bee wings may be small, but they're really strong. That's what I found out from Melanie Kirby, a bee researcher at WSU. She said you might think about wings like a kite. If you make a kite out of thin tissue, it might rip. But if you make it out of a strong plastic film, it will be stronger. Bee wings are made up of a material called chitin, and it's a lot like keratin, the material that makes up your fingernails. And the veins are also kind of like cross sections of the sticks in a kite. During their lifetime, bees fly from flower to flower. They move tiny grains of pollen around to help plants grow things like nuts, fruits, and vegetables. It's called pollination. Kirby said bees can put about 500 miles on their tiny wings in a lifetime. The next time you hear the buzz of a bee's beating wings, remember how important they are to our world and how they help us have food to eat. And that's a great segue to our next question.
Victoria, age 7, in Minnesota, wonders, why do humans have to eat and drink?
Here's WSU dietitian Alice Ma.
In the simplest sense, humans need food and water similar to, you know, cars need gas because we are essentially machines and we need energy from food and water to power the things we do every day.
Carbohydrates can give us a lot of energy, especially when they come from foods like grains, pasta, rice, veggies, breads, legumes, and nuts. Whew. Here's how it works. The body breaks down carbohydrates into simple sugars, which get absorbed into your blood. Sugar levels rise, and your pancreas, an organ down on the right side of your belly, releases something called insulin, which helps move the sugar into your cells. Your cells can now use the sugar to produce energy or store the sugar for later use. Water is also really important for our bodies.
Our body is mostly water, similar to, you know, the way the earth is mostly water. We use water for a number of things in our bodies, like, you know, it makes up the most of our blood, and the blood is important in carrying things through our body into other cells. And we lose a lot of water every single day through breathing, going to the bathroom, and sweating. And so we need to replace that water regularly in order to keep powering those processes.
While food and drinks are important to our health, they're also a really big part of culture. Humans spend the entire days celebrating food and throw festivals to appreciate different cuisines. Here's a question for you. What kind of foods do you celebrate in your family? Email dr.universe@wsu.edu. That's dr.universe@wsu.edu. You know who always seems to know when it's time to eat? Dogs.
Sam, age 8, in Virginia asks, can dogs tell time?
Dogs might not use clocks to tell time like humans do, but they are pretty good at following a schedule. They often know when it's time for a walk, dinner, or sleep.
They know when they normally eat, and so they start to get hungry before then, and then they start to bug their owners even before that to put the food out.
That's Lynn Nelson, a veterinarian and researcher at WSU. A lot of animals rely on something called a circadian rhythm, a 24-hour cycle, to help them figure out when it's time to do different things. This system is sort of like an inner clock. Humans have a circadian rhythm too, but they also have language and calendars and planners to talk about time.
And so we may not rely on those biological rhythms as much as animals do because they don't have that language. So they rely a little bit more on their innate senses and rhythms than maybe we do.
In a way, humans have helped dogs learn to tell time. When humans train dogs, dogs learn how to interact with both their humans and their environment. It also helps that dogs like food.
Animals that are food motivated, mm-hmm. which is oftentimes bears and dogs are really food motivated. Mm-hmm. Cats can be food motivated too, become especially attuned to telling time because mm-hmm. of the special treats.
We're wrapping up this episode with a question that comes from Giovanni, age 9, in Canada. How many microbes are there in the world? This one is a great reminder that not all questions have perfect answers. Here's Vivica Vadivalu, a microbiologist at WSU.
Microbes, they can be defined by a large number of different organisms that can't be seen by the naked eye.
Usually to see a microbe, we need a microscope.
One of the bacteria Vadivalu studies is the cause of bubonic plague.
The bacteria that I study is Yersinia pestis.
It's one of trillions of microbes on the planet that scientists study.
These biologists, these ecology and evolutionary biologists, that have tried to use what we already know about the population of microbes and try to predict how many there might be. And, you know, they come up with, oh, there's trillions of these bacteria. There are more bacteria than there are stars in the galaxy. We apparently only know 1,000 of 1% of that trillion, which means we effectively know zero.
But scientists learn about microbes all the time, as animals, including humans, get infected from bacteria or viruses, by culturing different microbes in the lab or by studying their DNA.
So that helps also with estimations of how many microbes there are out there.
And it's an amazing world out there. Thanks again to Natalie, Sierra, everyone who submitted a question, and our friends at Washington State University who helped with the answers. And thanks to you for listening. You make this podcast possible.
As always, you can submit a science question of your own at askdruniverse.wsu.edu. That's askdruniverse.wsu.edu.
Who knows where your questions will take us next?